Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen.
And today we are discussing the 2018 documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor? The documentary that chronicles the life and work of television's Fred Rogers.
Or Mr. Rogers, as most of us know him. The director of Won't You Be My Neighbor is Morgan Neville, who also directed the award-winning 20 Feet from Stardom, and said that his subject was deeper than the two-dimensional figure we all thought we knew.
And because this doc is only playing in theaters in limited engagement, we are sans guest.
And now here's us.
Here's us. Hi, George.
Hi, Paco.
Hi. So Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Nope, I won't. I won't. You won't. I live in L.A.
You live far away from me.
I'm not moving to Glendale.
Don't move to Glendale.
Actually, I might. We might move to Glendale.
Really?
It's more affordable. I don't know.
It is more affordable. It's hot. It's boring, but it is affordable. When did you see this, Doc?
Maybe Friday? Yeah, just over the weekend. It's showing the Los Feliz 3. You saw the trailers a while ago. I think it may be one of the Lemleys. I was pretty neutral on this, I gotta say. I feel like everyone's been like, you're gonna cry the whole time. I'm like,
right.
Am I a monster?
Yes.
Because I
first
was
of all,
not.
Yes.
Yeah, we know that I'm a monster. I didn't know what type of monster I was.
Right.
But
Some kind of monster.
Some kind of monster. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was well done, but I don't think it really. I kind of found myself asking a lot of questions, kind of like, why? Why is this happening right now?
Got it.
Why is this a subject right now?
You saw it last Friday. I saw it last Thursday. So we saw it basically at the same time. Mm-hmm. I saw it at the Embarcadero Cinema here in San Francisco with the wonderful relaxing and reclining leather chairs, which I didn't know they had.
Please sponsor us, Embarcadero. They should.
Yes.
The Embarcadero theaters are very nice. They got an alcohol bar now. That's what you call it, right? An alcohol bar. Yeah,
that's what they call it for those drinkers.
Yeah,
for you drinkers. Yeah, they have like individual leather reclining chairs, Lazy Boys. It's awesome.
Well, hey, the Los Feliz 3 is nothing to sniff at either. They've got buttery popcorn and employees with ponytails. So,
oh, named Griffin. And Dakota?
Most likely. Yeah. It is our favorite local theater. You've been to the Vista Theater?
Yes.
The manager of the Vista always dresses up like characters from the films. Like he would dress up as like a stormtrooper or whatever. They were not showing this there, but I would like to imagine that he was there with a red cardigan.
That would be awesome. Just changing his shoes while people are trying to give him tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So you are saying that you weren't particularly moved by this documentary.
I feel like I did not have the gut reaction that I think would maybe have been more. I think, okay, the nostalgia aspect of it, I think, is what's hitting like people of certain generations. And I think you can only react to this film kind of depending on what generation you came up in. That's my feeling about it.
Interesting. I mean, maybe. Let me submit. Maybe it's just that when you heard people left crying multiple times, you were a little like, okay, I'm going to go in a little guarded, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm like that way about Hereditary. I'm afraid of that shit. But
Right.
Maybe I did go in like being like, I didn't go in like stealing myself for like to not have an emotional experience.
Right. Because I did a little bit. A past guest and comedian and friend of the pod, Drew Harmon, went to see it, and he said he cried like four or five times. And he's a hearty Michigander from the Midwest. Like, I don't think he's as easily moved. So I went in a little bit like, and I also went on a date to it. So in the afternoon.
This was your date film?
This was my date film.
Okay.
This was a date film.
That's an interesting move. That is an interesting move. I don't know what you're trying to
I'm trying to be more vulnerable.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that's good. I think that's what this film is about. And I do feel like I like the attempt for those things.
Yeah. Thank you.
But
I'll give you the, and
yeah,
so
explain the date now. Are you going to just, right. now this is called Sup Date, where we review Paco's dates.
Date. Sup Tinder. Sup girl.
Wait, you don't take a Tinder date to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, do you? That's okay. Maybe you did. Maybe you did.
No, I didn't. She was not a Tinder date. But the
Match.com kind of situation.
What's our game
Farmers
plan
only.
Here? Are we going to assume people have seen it? The stock? Okay, so
by the time this comes out, I believe that a lot of people who are interested in seeing it will have seen it. And then I don't think there's anything you can spoil about a guy who died. Spoiler, he died
15 years ago.
It's not about his death at all, but I mean, I don't think there's a lot to spoil.
No, there's not a lot to spoil because so the only part I openly wept during is with the Coco part when Coco was like, I love
God.
You. Thank you
okay.
for coming.
That did get to me a little. That.
You're but not all made of stone.
No, I've cried at films before. I'm not going to say I don't cry at films. I'm definitely open to crying at films. It's also Coco, I think, had just died. Also, herself.
She did. She died like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like within a couple weeks of seeing this. So,
yeah. So let's start from you. Good, great, indifferent, bad, Doc. What do you think coming out of this?
I will not. I would, of course, say that it's well done. I think it's a well done documentary. They did. I was reading an interview where Morgan Neville said they kind of rushed it. I just find myself kind of questioning the purpose of this because I feel like it's been framed in this way. And maybe it's just like all the dialogue about the film. It's framed in this way of like, this is what the world needs now. Like the world needs like kindness and civility. And I'm like, I don't know that, let's say Fred Rogers was still around, that like, I don't know how he could exist in the world that we have. Maybe that is part of the point of it. It's like our world is so different now and it's so contentious and there's like school shootings and stuff and we're cynical people. And it's like, what is the point of then being like, here's someone who wasn't cynical. I'm like, great. They're not around and they couldn't exist in this right. format today. Like,
awesome.
There's like two or three arguments that I think I have issues with the film. And so I think I'm like, it was a well-made film, no doubt. He did a good job, but I think I have issues with like sort of like basic premises of the film. So,
well, let me ask you this then. Do you think Mr. Rogers would have the influence today if the show was starting today? Would it have the same effect and influence?
Okay, so then like we're dealing with completely different media landscapes. It's like what would be like the Instagram stories equivalent of Mr. Rogers? What would be like there? You couldn't have it. Be like, hey, let's watch 30 seconds expire. Let's watch a clock for 30 seconds.
It would be like
zero likes,
seconds.
All thumbs down. Like, and there is like, so there's sort of like these correlations between like this idea of, and maybe I am bringing my own baggage to it. We're all bringing our own baggage to it. I think whatever your child, it really delves into like childhood, right? If you like have a lot of nostalgia about your childhood, maybe you're like, oh, this was great. And I wish I could go back there. If you don't have that feeling about your childhood, and you don't associate that with Mr. Rogers. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, someone who grew up without really watching this stuff, it might be totally an alien, different experience for them to watch it. It was, for me, like, a background when I was growing up, but not, like, a background that I engaged in. You know, like, it was, like, when they would show, like, the antithesis of Mr. Rogers, it'd be, like, smash cuts of, like, slime falling on people's heads or, like, G.I. Joe or Transformers. I'm like, yeah. That stuff was entertaining. I liked that stuff. And then this would come on. I'm like, oh, this is so dreary. And like this is so, I understood production value at a very young age. I'm like, this is low production value. And okay, so I maybe not of the, maybe I'd never matured to the point. Maybe you have to have had kids as someone who grew up in the 70s and 80s and then now have kids to be like, I appreciate what he was trying to do.
Right.
But as someone who is still in the framework of like, I want to be entertained. I am the child that wants the fast cut explosions. I, you know, don't have the same response to it.
Yeah. Well, I pretty much have the exact same feeling about it. I grew up watching begrudgingly Mr. Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It was always a little too slow, a little too boring, a little too focused to toddlers. And then the creepy, like, kingdom thing.
Oh, that they King Friday. I never liked that the make-believe land.
No, it creeped me out. And there was that one particular witch character with the rosy nose and cheeks that really freaked me out. I really disliked that.
They didn't talk about the witch, did they? I don't think the witch came up in this too much. No, oh, his sister. It's his sister, right? Yeah, that's
slightly.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of apparently modeled after his sister, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But there was like, I mean, I feel like it was very comprehensive. They got a lot of great interviews for this. There's obviously people that really loved Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. My favorite part, along the same lines as production, was all the behind the scenes stuff where they talked to the cameramen and the writers and those kind of people.
Yeah, that stuff was fun. That was almost like, hey, this is like, oh, this happened the same time like the Muppet Show happened. Like, it's like that kind of, there's just a bunch of random ass hippies like hanging out. And they're just like, we want to work in TV, and we're just going to work on this weird puppet show.
Yeah. And also the genesis of the show is pretty interesting, too. I didn't know anything about that. I didn't realize that he was, you know, going to go to the seminary. I thought he already had. Mm-hmm. And that he wasn't into, like, the violent nature of TV shows and kids stuff, you know, and was like, you know, I want to teach the kids that it's okay to not hurt each other, to be smart and to be special and to be sensitive, which I think is an awesome teaching.
Right. And I think those are good abstract. I guess they are abstract now. They're not like pragmatic things now. They seem abstract, but maybe you can also fill me in on something that I would do. You know what the Presbyterians are in relation to other things? I don't know too much about what the Presbyterians
are. Well, they're kind of like Methodists. They're like Catholic light.
Okay.
You know, they're like the Episcopalians. I don't know. Of all the churches I went to, I never went to a Presbyterian church. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that women can be pastors. I think they can marry.
Oh, yeah. He obviously was married and had kids. And he was ordained. So even though he wasn't doing... like, he wasn't like a Sunday dude. He was an ordained minister, right? So,
right, yeah. And, you know, it's also like there's some real cool highlights in this, especially when he went in front of the Senate committee to talk about funding for PBS.
Yeah.
I unfortunately can't remember the senator's name. I don't have my notes, but, you know, you have this hard scrabbled senator from, I think, New York, who is like, I am not going to give PBS $20 million unless mm-hmm. you can fucking convince me. Mm-hmm. And then you see many people trying to convince this senator, and then Mr. Rogers gets his chance.
Yeah.
And just Mr. Rogers him, you know, he's just like, it's a special thing, and we just need to give kids love and be special.
I feel like this footage circulates every once in a while, and for the last few years has been circulating. And actually, I think that footage is what inspired Morgan Neville to make this. He was, I think, in one of the interviews, he said he came across that footage and just wanted to kind of dive a little bit more into this character. That's a great. I'm glad PBS exists. All these mm-hmm. things are great. Here's where I'm gonna. I don't know. I feel like such a crank.
No,
by critiquing
not. It's,
this.
It's fine to be honest in your feelings about hating Mr. Rogers and everything he stood for.
It's not hardly that. I just think like you can take. I think he's like someone you could take. Okay, so he was like obviously like a Republican, but he was like this kind of old school Republican. Like I'd say,
he's like a Gerald Ford Republican who to this day would be a moderate Democrat.
Well, yeah, I guess things have just bifurcated so hard and been polarized so hard that this brand of a kind of Republican is like not there in the culture.
No.
And to the point where people to the right of him. You know, like I don't know if it was the Westboro Baptists who like were protesting his funeral.
Right. Yeah.
But
they don't really say who it was, but
I assume that's
feeling.
Who it was. Who else was doing that then? I mean, in 2003, it probably was the Westboro Baptists. Okay. So there's a couple things. Like, do you think that media made okay, there's obviously there should be media that's for kids and media that's for adults, right? That's like we can kind of we do agree on that in general in society. Sure. Like there's a reason there's PG, PG-13, R,
and
right.
Porn.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, or above R. I think if you take this sort of logic that he had, I think it's like different models of like mass media or like even different models of like, I don't think any people talk about, you know, Benjamin Spock in terms of child raising in like 2018 anymore. I think a lot of these things have just changed. But right. Sure, when there was only like three major networks, PBS is incredibly important. Having this sort of alternative to commercial television for children is important. It still is important. But this idea that maybe like, okay, the same logic of like this quick cutting like Transformers video or like something that seems pretty mellow in our mind now, like Nickelodeon, whatever, when the slime goes on people's heads, like right. That was like, oh, a clutch your pearls moment. In contrast to Mr. Rogers, then you think of like now you could take some of that logic and think like, okay, well, didn't Marilyn Manson cause Columbine? Like then you can kind of go to that extreme, right? And so
yeah.
It's like I found that questionable in some ways.
I can get that. I feel like it also in okay, I could submit and agree with you and say that it betrays Mr. Rogers thinking that kids are super intelligent beings, as intelligent as adults, and kids could handle slime and love young yeah. brother and sister at
for
the
sure.
same time.
Yeah, you can do both of those things.
Yeah.
Did you watch Nanette? Did you watch the Hannah Gadsby special?
I haven't, no.
Okay, there's some stuff about this that's sort of like bringing up similar ideas about that. I was thinking that's just a new thought I'm having right now, and we have to have a whole separate discussion about Nanette, I guess. But I was also thinking about this film in relation to the Ruth Bader Ginsburg film, the other documentary that like it was a surprise hit that did way yeah. better at the box office than people expected. I think this is doing really well at the box office right now. I think because it cuts this broad swath of demographics.
I'd like to hear your opinion on RBG. I haven't seen it, and you said you saw it and you liked it.
I did like it, and I think they're similar in like, okay, here are these people that we don't appreciate enough, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like fighting the good fight, and we don't appreciate enough. And that is kind of where I see the similarity kind of beginning and ending. I mean, obviously, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is still around now, more important than ever that she hang Jeez. On. Given right. what's going on with the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
With Mr. Rogers, it's kind of like, again, I kind of am thinking like, why now? Because you don't have that much first-hand interview with him. You have some stuff with his family. You have like some writing that he did. I mean, I don't know that would be... Do you think it needed... Like, let's say he had started filming in 2003 and it had just direct, you know, interviews with Mr. Rogers. I don't know that matters that much. The guy seems to not have like a huge difference between his public persona and his yeah. private persona. I think that no, is the other mystery of him. It's like, is there a secret behind this guy? I'm like, nope, no secret. He is just what he appears to be.
Yeah, I think if anything's a secret, it was that he was a little crabby, mm-hmm. that he could be a little testy, that he was multi-talented as far as a composer, piano player, producer, writer, editor, director, right. actor. You know, I mean, I didn't realize he had done all those things. I didn't realize that he composed the music. I also didn't fucking realize he did the voices to the puppets. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't like, think I knew that either.
I thought that was pretty wild that he did the king and the queen. And then, you know, there were some touching moments when he's talking to Mr. Rogers' sons and and one of them was like, you know, he would talk to us sometimes if he got mad at us as the king in the king's voice, which was really weird.
Did you pick up on anything weird about the sons?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. There seemed to be some weird tension in there. I don't know what it was. I'm sure there's probably something online about them, but like what did you catch?
I mean, there was the one that wore the baseball hat and had the beard and kind of looked like Steve Agee, and I was kind of like
yeah,
I feel like there's something going on with him where he feels like he did have to rebel against this character, and then I found a quote from People magazine in 1978, like there was like one of the sons was off to college and he kind of had to like live down. He's like, yeah, like it's crazy having kind of the second coming of Jesus Christ as your dad.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Jeez.
It's kind of like true. Being the child of the Obamas. It's like being Sasha or Malia or something like that. I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of those guys, one way to alienate or differentiate yourself from your dad, especially when your dad's the second coming of Christ, is to do crazy ass things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either you go and you go in lockstep like the fucking like Eric Trump, or you try to be completely different, you know, which is probably what this son, I think, is it James?
There's a James and there's a John. So there's John and Jim, like the most base Fred, John, Jim, wife, Joanne, you know,
very
not getting
Presbyterian.
Too creative on the names, which is appropriate for the time. But I think I was feeling a little bit of like, I don't know, I guess they handed all of the final cut over to Morgan Neville. So they kind of knew that it was going to just be up to the director, how everything came out. Sure. I got the sense that there was some rebellion going on, but they both all... I mean, the family also, I think Fred came from like a kind of a wealthy family. It doesn't delve too much into that.
No, not at all, actually. Yeah. That's when I had two problems when I left that documentary screening, and I was telling my friend who I was with, because she completely loved it, which, you know, I actually really liked it too, but my big problems were, A, we never hear from Lady Aberlin, who's in it a lot. They never, I don't know if they talked to her or she refused to talk to them.
She did some phone interviews with Morgan Neville, but she hadn't been on camera in so long that she didn't really want to be on camera. That's what I read. Yeah. In maybe the article that you sent me, or there was another article I found that was an interview with one of the sons also. But I think it was just something I just Googled. It was like things you didn't know about the Mister Rogers film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
because I really wanted. I kept waiting to see her and hear her talk. And like, who? I mean, what an amazing person to hear from. Yeah. Someone who was with him from the start, basically, and also one of the only females it seemed involved in the project.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Rogers' neighbor, it would be kind of nice to have heard from her. And also, they kept mentioning that he was a rich kid, that he was Richie Rich, that he had not humble beginnings, that he came up rich. And it's like, well, what happened? Was his dad a like fabric, you know, king of Pittsburgh? Like,
yeah, I don't remember the thing. I just remember reading this thing that they had a huge, like, 6-bedroom mansion in Pittsburgh, and he kind of felt, I think, guilty about it, or felt like he had to live down this thing of like coming from this background. And I guess he ran everything as a nonprofit, so he wasn't, I don't even know what kind of salary he was getting off of it, but he was like very famous also. So he had came from this wealthy background, went to these, you know, religious colleges, and then could take time off before he get ordained to go work in television. Would you say that Mr. Rogers is an entertainer?
Yeah, completely.
Okay.
100%. 100%.
Okay.
I mean, act, sing, play the piano, compose, direct, edit, puppets. Yeah. I mean, completely. Without even a question.
Right. I guess it's sort of like framed as that's not what his intention was. His intention was to be like this voice of childhood. And so... I guess that's where I also like didn't really think about it that deeply. Like, what was he trying to do? Like, what it was a great, it was like a ministry for him, right? It was like kind of a form of ministry. And I did not view it as great entertainment at the time.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but it is like, you're right. He had all the skills completely. And he was making content. He was a content creator. If you're asking what would Mr. Rogers be today? He'd be a guy explaining shit on BuzzFeed with a cardigan, putting his shoes up, being like, okay, so let's talk about civility. You don't go up to Sarah Huckabee Sanders when she's in a restaurant. You write her a postcard, you slide it under her bill. Like, that would be maybe, like, I don't know what it would be now. The world is, like, so radically different in some ways.
It's completely, it's 180 degrees different now. And, like, who would own Mr. Rogers? Would it be the left? Would it be the right? And because we see snippets of the right on Fox, they do show clips of them calling him evil. And
right.
You remember that part?
Yeah, because it was like saying that he was responsible for our snowflake culture, essentially, yeah. was the right. logic. Even though he was a Republican. Everything he did is like old school Republican. When
absolutely.
I think of like
that's Barry Goldwater yeah. Republicanism right there. I mean, that's Gerald Ford Republicanism, which wasn't that fucking long ago.
Yeah.
Like pre-religious right that got their fucking talons into the Republican Party. Like that's how Republicans used to be.
Well, I guess. And Republicans don't want to spend $20 million on PBS. That's like probably the number one part of it, actually, when you think about it.
Right. Sure. But the fact that they blame Gen Xers on being entitled because they grew up with Mr. Rogers, who basically said, you deserve to be loved and you are a special being, it's so insane that they would yeah. even try to take that. That view on him. And I feel like that they kind of bring up that kind of hurt him, right? That mm-hmm. he kind of, and later in his life, he was hurt by that because he felt like people didn't quite understand what he was trying to do.
Well, I mean, how would you sum up what he was trying to do? Because I don't know that I could, I guess this kind of notion gets bandied about that, like what he did was radical. It was radical niceness, or it was radical civility or radical politeness. I don't know. Like this sort of like this notion of like he was really a badass and you didn't know it looking at him. It was very badass what he was doing.
Right.
That's sort of this premise.
I think what Mr. Rogers was trying to do is like out of the 50s and 60s when parents were like children should be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. You know, children should not speak until they're spoken to. Children are not yet an adult until you turn 18. They're basically a property of your parents. I think that's tantamount to what he was trying to say is like, none of that is right. That kids are intelligent human beings that have emotions and feelings and thoughts, and that they should be heard and understood and talked to, not as children, but as like an actual thinking human being, mm-hmm. you know, with intellectual ability. So I feel like that has come about, you know, now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are teachings in Montessori schools and all that kind of stuff that embrace that thought now, where you don't talk down to a kid, you talk to him as a thinking being, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what he was trying to mm-hmm. get across.
Right. It's sort of positioned like he was him and like Spock and these other childhood people were like a new wave of like thinking about childhood.
Yeah, and they all went to the same school. I mm-hmm. mean, didn't they all come out of the same school and the same, like literally the same college?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it was something like that. And I guess it is hard to view that now with the eyes of like the time before that and then like how radical that was at the moment. But I guess I just find it I was saying that I think it matters what generation you were when you look at this stuff. Like, do you identify more as a Gen X person, or do you identify as like, I guess, what is our generation roughly?
Well, we're Gen Xers, baby.
Yeah, I guess I feel like a little bit like I identified with Gen X, but I was a little bit younger than Gen X. But like that was all the people that when I was like getting into stuff, those are the people I looked up to. And I feel like there is this sort of era there where Gen X is sort of associated with like negation, right? It's sort of like an anti-hero. That like the first anti-hero things, I think. I mean, obviously baby boomers had anti-heroes, but Gen X was set right. up in this like oppositional way. So I think of Gen X as being oppositional to Mr. Rogers' aesthetic.
Yeah.
At least right. aesthetically.
Well, look, who is the poster child of Gen X? Kurt Cobain. What did Kurt Cobain wear? Like,
yes.
He wore sweaters.
Okay, okay.
You know, like...
I hear that.
There's a mirroring there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that.
I feel like probably Kurt Cobain was glued to Mr. Rogers growing up. And then also He-Man and You Can't Touch That. What was the TV show that had the slime?
You Can't Do That on Television.
Yeah, You Can't Do That on Television. And, you know, everything we used to watch.
Right. And then, like, I guess I view Mr. Rogers as a piece of an entire media diet that we had as kids, right? And he was, like, the dry wheat cracker of that diet. He was the rice cake of the media diet when you were a kid. It's like, I get that this is kind of,
that's,
you know,
funny.
What? It's like, he's like the documentaries when you're a kid of media, right? Like, so it's like,
it's,
I know it's good
Mr.
for
Rogers
me.
Of podcast.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like, I know it's supposed to be edifying in some way.
Right.
The difference is now documentaries are more entertaining than scripted fiction. But
yes. Well, because they're also stylized. Like, Mr. Rogers wasn't stylized. He literally had an egg timer on camera for a minute and just sat there. Like,
yeah.
I think he was all about slowing things down, appreciating, smell the roses, take your time, be thoughtful, think about things, you know? And, mm-hmm. and that's, I mean, MTV, the advent of MTV and their quick editing, flashing style, like, negated that right out the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess if I think about, like, watching a minute go by on television as like, this is kind of like John Cage. This is like, yeah, this is like avant-garde in this certain way, but it's like so not at the same
awesome.
Time. Yeah.
John, Mr. Rogers as John Cage. That's awesome.
Oh, John Cage yeah. does have a Mr. Rogers-y vibe to him sometimes. If you watch any videos of him explaining things, it's very similar.
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious. Who would be the Philip Glass of kids television?
Oh, man.
Captain Kangaroo?
Do you watch any kids TV now? Have you watched kids TV in the last? I mean, does it seem weird to when people do? I mean, Adventure Time, I guess, is really a lot of jokes for adults in it. When I lived with like a little kid, like my friends, I lived with my friends who had a little kid, and she would watch like Caillou, and I would just sometimes watch that with her. I'm like, this kid is such a brat. I don't know. I cannot handle Caillou.
Well, they're sassy now. Like, the kid heroes in cartoons are sassy and sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And the parents are kind of dumb and don't know what their kid's up to. There's a lot of, like, we'll just have dinner. And they're like, okay, off to solve this mystery.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that. I mean, when I, yeah, I mean.
I mean, Mr. Rogers was an adult on TV.
Yes.
And then it's like, we did have, like, kids as protagonists and things. Or there was, like, you know, like, I would watch other shows where there was kids and they're kind of the protagonists, but like, it just seemed weird to have this adult, like, just kind of like, I guess it wasn't condescending. It just was like, I couldn't really, I guess I'm bringing up a lot about my own childhood is what's coming.
That's
up.
Fine. Well, that's what good documentaries do. They're reflective. That's why good documentaries or documentaries that are made well mm-hmm. make you sit and reflect, because they bring up stuff about yourself and your childhood and whatever you need to bring to it. I mean, that's active viewing, George. That's not passive viewing.
Yeah.
Love is at the root of everything. All learning, all parenting, all relationships. Love or the lack of it. And what we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, there's two other things that are interesting. I guess there is like a Mr. Rogers moment happening in our popular culture, because there's like two films coming out based on Mr. Rogers. There's one with Tom Hanks, and it's directed by Mariel Heller, the sister of Emily Heller, comedian.
Right.
She made that really good Diary of a Teenage Girl a few years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So she's doing that, and it's I was reading about that. It's not a biopic. She's saying it's not a biopic in the traditional sense of a biopic.
Right.
It's about like a journalist who goes and interviews Mr. Rogers in like 1998 or something, and like he thinks it's going to be a puff piece, but then it changes his life. So, which I guess is going to be coming off the tails of this documentary. Probably also why they rushed this documentary. I mean, he said they got this done in like a year and a half or something.
Wow.
Which is crazy for the amount of footage they had to come through.
That's super quick. And just getting all the interviews. I mean, footage and interviews takes a long time.
Yeah. And then the other bit of narrative fiction that is around Mr. Rogers is this new Showtime show. Have you heard about this one?
No.
It's called Kidding. It's actually Michelle Gondry and Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey is a Mr. Rogers type, like a very famous television host, but it seems to be in the vein of a lot of Gondry stuff. It's sort of like whimsical and like very dark.
Dark, right.
So it's going to be like the dark take on Mr. Rogers, and I imagine the Tom Hanks take will be the very Tom Hanksian, you know,
right,
Americana wholesome version.
Sure. It's kind of odd when... I mean, it makes sense when you have our political climate that people would want to look back almost reactionary to times that were simple and kind of quiet. And, you know, the chief philosophy was love and you're worth, like you're worth something and you're loved no matter who you are and what you do, versus now, which is just like divide, conquer, you suck, you're worthless if you're not with me, right. You know.
Well, again, like I feel that's why I feel hesitant to be critical at all of this, because I feel like am I criticizing the idea that people have intrinsic worth?
No, I'm not
like going Ayn Rand on like, you know, like these snowflakes need to like toughen up or whatever. Right. I'm just feeling like there's kind of a logic that you can extend from the kind of. I guess Mr. Rogers always seemed like it was a little like too wholesome in this way that didn't seem real. And then I guess the point of this is just like, yeah, like actually like childhood, it used to be terrifying. Like kids, like childhood's a relatively recent part of like life, like in a modern world, right? In the last like 200-300 years, like children worked in factories.
Right.
We created this kind of like, we created teenagers, we created kind of this artificial buffer of childhood. I mean, I guess in like what, the 1700s, like kids just died all the time. Everyone, women died in childbirth, all sorts of stuff.
So it's relatively like posies, a
newer,
man.
Yeah. It's a newer phenomenon in some ways, I guess. So I'm not like, but I'm glad that we have that buffer zone. But I guess it just seemed like I guess I am revealing way too much about my own view of things right now.
Also, I mean, Mr. Rogers was very messagey. It was super messagey. Everything, there was a message in everything. And it's like, yes, I get it. Like by the fifth minute, I mean, like, yes, be nice. I get it. The mailman, thank you for bringing the letter. You're awesome. Yeah, you know, Mr. Policeman, put your feet in the water. That's groovy. But like after a while, I'm like, you know, I kind of want to see some spaceships. You know,
or like they compare it to Pee-wee's Playhouse, almost like, look at this corruption of the format.
There was Pee-wee's Playhouse. Yeah. I mean, Pee-wee's Playhouse was awesome. But maybe you and I were just a little too old for the viewing at the time. I don't know. I feel like I was in around the same age. I do remember
saying the show ended in 1975, which I didn't realize because I felt like they were on constant reruns my whole childhood.
Holy shit.
And I guess that's why they were. Yeah, that's why they had that production value that seemed. I'm like, why does this seem like old production value? Because it was like. Basically done by the time I was conscious.
It was in Desilu Studios. I just remember staying home from school sick and watching, like, it would be like, Please Don't Eat the Daisies, Gunsmoke, I Love Lucy for 6 hours, and then Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You know, and after that, you want some fun, some stimuli, and you want some, like, craziness, you know?
Daytime television has not gotten better, has it? Like, daytime television has always been kind of the bottom of the...
When you have...
I like that Karen Kilgariff had a bit about winning a daytime Emmy at some point, which is, like, not winning an Emmy.
Right.
But she used to work for Ellen, yeah.
When you search out soap operas for entertainment, there's a problem. Like, there is nothing on other than game shows. It's horrible. It's horrible business. Yeah.
Yes, being homesick in the day was, like, the worst before on-demand streaming.
Oh, my God. Now, kids these days, they don't understand, but it's true, man. Like, there was times when I would have rather gone to school. You know, it's like, that's a lot more fun than staying home because there's nothing to do. And, you know, my parents are always like, if you're bored, you're a boring person. You know, find something to do, which, you know, you don't want to hear that.
Am I a cynic, Paco?
I don't know if you're a cynic, George, or, you know.
Am I a hater? Am I a hater?
You are wearing a black turtleneck right now.
Yes.
And your round glasses, so.
Clove cigarette. I feel like such a crank by saying any, without saying like, I, you know, sure, it was actually a good film.
Right.
Yeah. Coco and Mr. Rogers, that'll get you now. Like anything with Coco now is going
to
get you.
It's going to be heartwarming. Yeah. I mean, there were a couple moments when he asked people to think for a minute about who inspired them. You know, that was very, that was touching. I thought that was awesome.
Right.
Because
that was like Morgan Neville taking a page from the Mr. Rogers book.
Yeah.
And like, I guess that is when everyone started tearing up. I did see people crying. You'll see people crying in Los Feliz all the time, but
for no good reason.
No, like I legit saw people crying at the end of La La Land, and I was
you're kidding.
I'm like, okay,
Jesus.
This is where we are now. This is what's happening.
Maybe Fox News is right.
I don't know.
Maybe it created way too many snowflakes.
It's like, at the same time, let's look at this whole argument of like, yes, there should be funding for media that is not driven by money, right? Like, I don't really understand how the BBC works, but like, it's paid for by tax dollars.
Yeah.
You pay a TV license fee.
Yeah.
And they do all sorts of insane shit. And the BBC does like lots of crazy programming.
Well,
they'll do. I mean, Teletubbies came out of there,
right.
And like the Sherlock shows came out of there,
and The Office.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff gets funded when it's not dependent on this commercial system.
Well,
I think that's a part that didn't really get addressed either. When you think about like, why do we need $20 million for public television? Because the competition is this, and like he never took that economic stance on anything. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I'm trying to do something slower and more boring. That's kind of like the overall message. Like, don't you wish we had slower, more boring television? I'm like, no, I wish we had like money going to the arts that is paid for with taxes.
Right.
Like the NEA and all these other things that like the right doesn't want funded anymore. And if you look at like, I mean, I just hung out in Canada and this festival that made no financial sense at all. Like, and like, there's no way ticket sales covered all of this. This doesn't make sense.
Somebody in the Canadian broadcasting community gave some cash. How was that? Did you have a good time?
It was fun. I had a great time.
What was the festival called?
Sled Island. It's in Calgary. Calgary, apparently, all of Alberta, I have learned. I'd never been to Alberta. I'd never been outside of British Columbia.
A lot of cattle.
In Canada. Yeah, it's like basically people are like, this is the Texas of Canada. It's oil. It's cattle. It's the tar sands, apparently.
Right.
And then I just learned about some crazy fight between British Columbia and Alberta that we have never heard about because we're dealing with other insanity on a second to second basis.
Right.
Like everything is so insane for us right now. Do you think it's posited as like this film came out because of Trump, or it's like we need this to be an antidote to Trump?
Well, yeah, I think it was multi-layered. I think from what you said that there's these biopics that are coming out, and the fact that Trump is our president. This is a perfect time for this kind of documentary. I would imagine we're going to get one on Gandhi. We'll get one on the Mother Teresa. We'll get, you know, like all
there's a lot
the
of controversy on Mother Teresa, apparently.
There is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently she took some kickbacks. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like anytime when the economy is doing bad or people are politically upset, you start seeing shows like Ask an Angel or My Mother
Touched
Was
by,
God.
Yeah.
You start seeing programming like that. When the economy is doing well and people are feeling confident, you see, let's eat each other. Time to go to war. Survivor.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's an interesting. Yeah. Like during Obama, you get Walking Dead.
Right.
During, during Reagan, you get Touched by an Angel or Highway to Heaven.
Exactly. That's exactly
right. That's interesting.
Right. So programming follows the opposite of the political spirit and zeitgeist of the nation. And of course, the economy, too. When the economy is tanking, you get all kinds of like puff pieces. And it's right. So that's why this is coming out now. And you'll see more of these, of all the good people. You know, you'll
so see Handmaid's Tale is like kind of like not quite right. It's like, it's too real. It's too real. Dial it back.
Right, right. But that started in the Obama administration. So.
Right. Well, they are when they started like the production on it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, you know, that's like if you want to get a TV show made, write something about an angel right now. Like he was a hitman. Mm-hmm. Now he's an angel. He has to make do. He has to go back and say sorry to all the people he killed. You know,
that Paco, kind of thing. Why are you giving this away on the podcast? This is your ticket out of... It's your ticket out of the hate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Saint Valentine on Fox.
So now it would be like HBO is Fred Rogers. By day, he's a TV host. By night, he's an assassin. It's Dark Mr. Rogers, which is like what the Jim Carrey thing is going to be. I think it's going to be Dark Mr. Rogers.
Of course. Yeah. Is that going to be on HBO?
That's Showtime, actually.
Showtime. Nice.
Yeah. And I think that's also interesting is the take. It's like, oh, Gondry's European. So that's his take on Mr. Rogers.
Sure.
And then the Tom Hanks take on Mr. Rogers is going to be what we're used to. You know?
Right.
So
that's hilarious. So, I mean, you know, overall, I thought this documentary, it was well made. And
you got to see it. I think you have to see it.
Yeah. If you're of a certain age, you're really going to, you know, there's parts that are going to make you laugh. Like they showed, like, you know, the guy would take pictures of his butt on set, you know, and like just some whimsical stuff.
Oh, are we leaving out a major plot point that I think is Officer Clemens? That's also where I found that to be like really like a kind of a weird two-way. There was like multiple ways to look at the Officer Clemens stuff. He was a closeted gay actor who was on the show, African-American guy playing a cop,
right?
Another layer of irony. But there's sort of like this one scene that I was like, I don't know why we're encouraging, like he basically tells him to stay in the closet and get married in like I guess the late 60s early 70s. And he's just like, it didn't work. Guess it didn't work, guys. I wonder why. I wonder why my straight marriage didn't work out.
Right.
But then they also try to be like, well, Fred really loved this guy, but he did force him to like stay in the closet and marry a woman. So it's like, that's kind of like where I find another tension in this in 2018 of like, okay, what's the lesson there? I mean, I guess the ultimate lesson, like Clemens is like, happy that his career was made by the show.
Absolutely.
And he also like was like, yeah, I had a great relationship with this man and we were like, you know, we really loved each other. But, you know, I guess people make mistakes. I guess that's what he's saying. Do you think that's what the message is?
Like, well, yeah. I mean, I think it's, I think
it was too early. It was too early for that to happen.
Well, I think part of what the documentary is showing is warts and all. I mean, they're trying to show the multifaceted Fred Rogers. Like he wasn't just, you know, consistently just floating on a cloud and anointing people. He also had moments where he had to be convinced that having a gay actor on his show who is now out of the closet was the best thing to do, which he did. He comes around at some point.
Yeah, he does eventually. Yeah.
But I mean, and it's when you have that man. I don't remember his real name, unfortunately.
Pierre, I believe it's Pierre, but yeah.
Okay.
Something French sounding.
Or Francois? Maybe. Okay. If you find this out, tweet at us at sup.podcast.
Yeah. We're going to have a whole fact checked episode coming up.
Yes.
Where so everything is fact checked.
He, you know, when he's looking straight at the camera and he's basically tearing up and saying like, he finally accepted me, you know, and it meant a lot. And he had a sham marriage. Then, you know, it's a beautiful moment. Peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of need that stuff. If it was all just peaks, it would be kind of a boring documentary. So you have to show that kind of stuff. But I thought that was touching. I thought that was nice. And obviously, he loved him. I mean, I'm talking about the actor loved Mr. Rogers as not as a persona, but as a person for that.
Right.
You know? So, and there's always these, you know, other moments of him swimming, you know, like he liked to go swimming and all the other things. And I thought, for me... And they also talked to his wife, Fred Rogers' wife.
Right, Joanne,
And that was really sweet to see. And I didn't realize that she had been part of the show as well. But I thought a very poignant moment was the end, and you might push back on this, but when he says, am I a goat or a sheep? you know, on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. He wants to know, like, did I live the right life? Did I do what I was supposed to do? And meaning, like, you know, goats are
the greatest of all time.
Are the greatest of all time and may have stepped on people's feet. And then there's sheep who are fluffy and lovely and get into heaven. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought that plot point was apropos.
Right. I mean, I think it is like his humanness is there is a little vanity there. Right. And
sure.
I think he acknowledges it. And I think part of it is his like maintaining his weight. And yeah. his, like, health nutness.
Yeah.
Is a 1-3-4 right. kind of just, like, OCD, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
About, like, obsessively trying to maintain this weight that equals the number of letters in I love you or whatever.
Yeah. That's something.
Yeah. So I'm not pushing back on that. I do think, like, that scene obviously has to do with his own self-doubt. There's like mm-hmm. sort of a lot of doubt that he has about what he's doing. I think maybe because it's a little bit this thing of like, if you're going to try to be this, you know, content producer, you have ego, right? There mm-hmm. is an ego there. And I think he was trying to balance out that a little bit of like, that maybe that, and that's like such a thing of like someone who's so persnickety about details. It's like, look, everyone knows that you did all this great stuff, but in your mind, you're still like, was it enough?
Right. Sure. Of course. I mean, what artist isn't filled with self-doubt, you know, and he's an mm-hmm. artist. I mean, Mr. Rogers was an artist. So like what artist does not have self-doubt and feelings of failure and also being a fraud? Like, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, Mr. Rogers was no different than that. And I wonder how much he did make off of this show, if anything, you know, from a PBS show that was nonprofit and, you know, like today they would do cutaways of like product placements of like Monsanto shit, you know, like.
Right. It would be a podcast. Mr. Rogers would have a podcast.
It would be
really long silences.
Is this really the first podcast?
Silences. Maybe. Like,
oh, my God.
We're going to sing a song
funny.
Together.
That is funny.
Yeah. This
they did play games. I guess we can't do cast the
me undies. If you wet your pants, you should try me undies.
Brought to you by Blue Apron.
Yeah,
Chibi, my dinner. I mean, overall,
puppet
like,
meat must be banned.
Right.
No meat.
I thought it was fine. It'd be funny to hear Marc Maron interview him.
That would have been just like. So who are your guys?
Yeah.
JC, the big one.
Yeah, right. What'd your old man do?
What is his accent, by the way? That's not a Pittsburgh accent, right?
It's kind of northern Pennsylvania.
It's a northern Pennsylvania accent.
It has it has that nasally Pennsylvanian accent to it.
Yeah,
so,
like Amish light. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone I've met from Pittsburgh has a kind of a high-pitched nasal voice.
Huh.
So he kind of it's up there in this register up here where you kind of hold your breath when you talk.
Well, I think we've kind of covered most everything on this except for the animation. Animation was great.
Yeah.
We got a note when there's animation in a documentary. That's always like the most expensive part of a documentary.
Right.
That and music licensing. So.
Yeah. You've been watching any docs?
I'm really excited about the Three Identical Strangers, hopefully I will have seen it by the time this is aired, and I'm going to try and do an episode on it if we can get around to it, because that story is, you know that story, right?
I don't, I saw that you posted that, but I haven't looked into it.
Just watch the trailer, you'll be like, how did this happen? It's basically three identical triplets separated at birth. And then two of them discover each other at college because people keep calling them each other's names. There was a piece on it, I think maybe in New Yorker or something a while ago. And then it gets into, I think, just like, how did a hospital end up doing this?
Right. That's incredible. I just, I watched The Staircase.
I'm like into it, but not at the same time. I'm like 13 hours. Am I on this jury? What is happening? You know?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's like a perfect documentary. There are obviously you know, you can nitpick it and pull it apart, and there's things they should have done and shouldn't have done. But I remember watching it, the original series, and then they added three more episodes to it, which made it, you know, even longer. But I think it's fascinating. I really like it a lot as far as like a true crime documentary. It's one of the best.
I mean, there are a lot of twists and turns, and that's like the thing that's keeping me hanging on. I'm in the middle of the court stuff right now.
Right.
I'm just like, oh man, I can't. And it's just like so gruesome to like those photos just keep getting brought up. And it's just like, I don't know. My stomach for this stuff, I'm like, I don't want to spend 13 hours of my life on this, but I guess I have to because everyone's talking about it.
And you do a documentary podcast.
I know. I'm starting to wonder if that is a good idea.
You're starting to, you're too queasy for true crime and too cynical for.
Yeah, 3 years into this, I'm like, do I even like documentaries? This is a good question.
That's the eternal question. Yeah. For me, yes. I love them so much. There's so, and then like it just doesn't stop. There's so many that are coming out that look, the Three Strangers looks incredible though.
Yeah.
That's right up my alley. I love
an RBG.
Like
I gotta say, there was a lot of stuff I didn't know about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I'm glad that came out while she's alive, and I'm glad she's still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Awesome. Okay, buddy. Well, yeah. I think this does it. You people, if you're listening and you love us, please donate to our Patreon page. You can find us on patreon.com/supdocpodcast. Yeah.
Give us a review on iTunes. Give us a review on whatever format of podcast you listen to. Like, just those help a lot. It helps people find the show. And we just like to hear about it. You know, I thought of something. We should just be like, hey, on iTunes, just tell us whether you like me more or Paco more. And then
you really
want to
have
know.
A popularity contest?
Yeah, we'll just have it on our iTunes ratings page. That way we'll get more ratings and then we'll really see who's on top.
That's funny. It's like running for podcast president.
Look, I am a goat and you are. No, just kidding. We're both sheep. When it comes down to it, we're both lambs of God.
Yeah, that is true. We both walk in the eyes of God. But yeah, you know, donate to Patreon, subscribe, review, rate, listen to, tell people about SupDoc, the whole bit. If you love documentaries, you'll love SupDoc. Just a couple doc nerds, George.
Yeah, we're coming up on 100 episodes. That's going to be, who knows what's going to happen. It's going to come sooner than we think it's going to come.
And we got some requests out there for some big guests. That would be awesome. I hope they get back to us. I would love to talk to Morgan Neville. Mm-hmm. How great would that be?
Morgan, if you listen to this episode, I did enjoy the film.
Yeah. If you're friends of Morgan, don't send him this. Just tell him that we'd like to talk to him. Yeah, we got a lot of great things coming out soon. So, you know, listen to SupDoc wherever you get your podcasts. All right.
All right.
That's it.
Thank you. We'll have a guest next time. Bye.
Thanks guys. Bye bye.